Dr. Baffa.
And Debbie Millett, welcome. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
We are super excited to have you on the show. Welcome, everybody, to the Two Doctors podcast. Thank you all for checking us out and listening. We are very excited tonight to have another guest on the show, Debbie Millett from Salt Lake City. And for people who don't know you, do you want to take a moment or two to tell us your background, your place in the sport, and one of the many reasons why you're so important at being on this podcast?
I don't know that I'm that important.
You are the key to the tonight's podcast.
Absolutely.
And you're our first female guest. This is critical.
Oh, hey, I like that a lot.
Exactly. The first of many, let's hope. Let's hope.
Yes.
Let's hope
that we can
stop scaring them away.
Well, I am going to be, I'm the meet director for the 2016, this year's National Championships and Olympic Trials in Salt Lake City. So hopefully we get to talk about that tonight. Mm-hmm. I did the 2014, hosted the 2014 National Championships in Salt Lake City at the Grand America. Everyone, I'm sure, remembers that. That was an amazing event.
It was.
Absolutely.
Got into the sport of weightlifting. Oh, wow. 10 years ago, maybe, is all. I got into it late in life. I was doing strength training, kind of the bodybuilding type stuff, type strength training in the big gyms. And I loved getting strong, but I hated the goals of, you know, my lifting partners. I hated them posing in the mirrors and thinking about body image and all that. And I thought, there's got to be something more. It's got to be something. So I'm searching on the internet, and I run into Erica Yamasaki from Australia doing the snatch. And I had never seen the Olympic lifts before. I hadn't watched them at the Olympics or anything. So it was my first exposure to the snatch, and I just went, there is a lift. Now that's a lift. So I'm asking all my partners, teach me how to do this. And they said, we can't. You got to have a coach for this kind of thing. So at the time, nobody was doing Olympic lifting. It was just the beginnings of CrossFit. It was like 2007, 2006, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking around in Utah, and there was only one coach and one really small team in Salt Lake City. In fact, in most all of Utah. And it was a middle school math teacher, and he was coaching the middle school kids out of a converted band closet behind the auditorium.
That sounds pretty typical. Yeah, it's pretty typical.
Really? Yeah. So I'm totally out of my comfort zone. I'm 38 years old, and I'm training with these middle schoolers. And, you know, they're not going to adjust their training time for me. So I'm leaving work early so I could get there right at 3:10 or whenever their school gets out, you know, and training with these kids. And in his little training area, he had like two wood platforms and a bunch of York plates, and the walls were lined with pictures from Strength and Health. So my first exposure to the sport,
exposure to the sport was basically the 1950s version of weightlifting.
Closet. Way back to the 30s, actually.
Wow, going way back.
I think there was one picture of Robin Goad, and that was the only female or any recent lifter. But yeah, it was Bednarski and Szymanski and all those guys. Tommy Kono was up on the wall.
Wow.
And, the coach didn't have a ton of experience with, you know, coaching lifters to the next level or anything. And so the best he had, and there was nothing on the internet. So at the time, the best he had was Strength and Health, and he had like every issue of Strength and Health.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it folded by then? Strength and Health, still going? You must be using back issues.
Oh, absolutely. He had back issues to like the 30s, I think 1936 or 39. Yeah. So he would give me a stack of 10, and I would take them home and read them from cover to cover and bring them back. And he'd give me the next stack. And I would I just immersed myself in the history of weightlifting and just loved it. Absolutely loved everything about it. And, I did pretty well, and I decided to compete at the master level and won a couple of masters, nationals, and worlds.
Nice.
And met a bunch of really great people. Thanks.
Yeah, that's great.
And ended up I qualified for the American Open a couple times. I bombed both times. It was epic.
No strangers to that. Don't worry.
Yeah. You fit in very well with the two doctors, Debbie.
Were you an East Coast lifter?
But it's such an honor, you know, to go and compete with these girls. And I remember thinking, you know, I took myself really seriously. I was training hard and as seriously as I could. And I'm showing up at the American Open and I'm warming up and I looked around at the other lifters and they're amazing. You know, this is Melanie Roach was in my weight class, you know, and lifting. And, you know, I just thought, you are so out of your league. You are so, you should not be here. And then I bombed. But I loved it.
Qualifying for those meets, the American Open and the Nationals, as a master is a real significant endeavor. So that in itself is a real accomplishment.
Yeah, and you know, I spent a lot of time justifying and defending being a Masters champion. It's a really hard place to be because you know you're not as good as the senior lifters. You know, nobody's right. Silly enough to. Well, some lifters are, some master lifters are, but at the time, you know, I knew I wasn't at their level. I wasn't comparing myself to them at all. But it does take a real level of commitment and priorities and consistency to be able to compete at that level and then win. You know, I was winning everything I was entering, and that takes some dedication. So it was a hard spot to be in, to want to be proud of what you're doing, but also not to feel like you're exaggerating it.
Right.
You know your place within the sport. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, did you print out on old computer paper world champion of the world in weightlifting and hang that around your gym for years on end?
Because we know someone who did as a master.
I did not. I hid all of my medals because I really was tired of, you know, I don't know, defending it. But yeah, no. Really quickly, I got into trying to bring the sport, try and offer the sport to other people. Because after my first world championships, I got Masters Worlds. I got a sponsorship contract with a major equipment manufacturer. And it was a really big payout. I would bet it's the biggest weightlifting payout probably in the history of the U.S. I'll have to text you the amount. It's insane. And, you know, at the time they were like, we really want to promote weightlifting. We want you to be the face person. And I'm saying, no, you don't want me. You want like Melanie Roach. She's amazing. Go with her. No, we're going to use you. So I'm like, I was really reluctant to get on board because I didn't want to be disrespectful to the sport.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was no good. And so I didn't want to do that. So I said, I'm willing to be involved if you'll get some real weightlifters involved, if you'll pair me up with a real coach. And I knew these coaches would never accept it. So I thought, oh, here's my out. So I gave them a list of five. And they called. The first one on the list was Michael Cohen. And he said yes. And so there we went. And we made these DVDs. And I made a bunch of money. And so I invested it in a gym and brought a coach in and offered weightlifting to Utah.
That's great.
That was a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
So is that the start of Praxis then?
It is, yeah. 2008, we officially started, and there were like 40 weightlifters in the state of Utah, three girls, and now there are, you know, 500.
Wow.
And we have a national champion from Utah, Cassidy Duffeld, and Jesse Bradley's training at the OTC. So
that's amazing.
We've got some great lifters in Utah. Really
so I don't want to wax too poetic about the good old days because they were rough, but I feel like, you know, hearing the start of your story, training in a broom closet somewhere in a middle school, old posters on the wall, is an experience that if you were that pre-CrossFit cusp you had and post, you just don't get anymore. Like there's an absence of those like grassroots, we're just doing this in whatever space we'll find. Like you said, you left work early. Like there was no convenience. You had to struggle. Like there was high barrier to entry that if you were doing it, it was because you totally loved it. because nobody in their right mind would do it otherwise, because it was such a pain to do.
Right. I would get up at 4 a.m. before work and train in my garage in Utah in the winter. I did the snatch and clean and jerk with gloves on. I know nice. These are like those old grandpa stories, but that's real. Like, I had coats on doing this. Now I wasn't any good, so I didn't realize that, you know, that it was really affecting my lifting. But yeah, I get really frustrated and disappointed with lifters who complain about the temperature in the gym or the equipment.
Right.
You know what? Yeah.
They have no idea.
No idea.
And even still, some other countries, you know, that are really good, produce really good lifters, you know, they're lifting on absolutely uneven surfaces and super hot. Yeah. We have it really nice here.
Yeah, it seems like.
Especially now.
It seems like a lot of those strength and health cutouts that you had have been replaced with Lululemon and bright colors.
It's a very different.
It's Iron Mind with Pyrrhos Demas and, you know, those great guys on the wall.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Yes. But it's kind of a shame. I mean, I think there was a great place for some of those old. Like, I remember the first time I started lifting, the first real Olympic weightlifting gym I went to was in the basement of Bayonne High School. And it was, I was so young. I didn't know what a good bar was. I had no idea what it was. I don't know if they had any decent bars, but it was like, you know, whatever plates they could cobble together, and the platforms, it was just like wood and stacked wood, and like blocks were stacked wood. But it was, and you had to train at night basically because it was a high school in the day.
And you're sharing it with like six other people. It, you know, one platform, and you're stripping the bar off, and stripping the weights off, and adding on the next weights for the next lifter. And we got fast at that. We were sharing and training together on one bar.
Well, and we saw some people, of those loading skills on display.
Not too long.
I know, right? Now you know where it comes from.
The World Championships in Houston. While Dr. Westbrook and I were doing some commentating, we were saying, Debbie is flying. Look at that.
Yeah, she was moving fast. You bring up a good point, because that is sort of a lost etiquette, because every time I finish a lift, the first thing I do is to go to the side of the bar and look around saying, what do you want next? And then half the time I'll be by myself and be just talking to myself. But the other half of the time, it's somebody else on another platform. But we didn't have the luxury of, you know, multiple platforms back years ago. It was one and usually not even a full platform.
Oh, my lifters stand on a platform like they own it, and everybody wants their own.
Right.
And their own bar.
I know.
And we knew what each other was lifting. You know, I knew where my training partners were at because I knew what they had on the bar all the time. So I don't know.
I think like that's a good motivator, it gives you a sense of where somebody is and whether they're coming up or what's happening. I mean, when I was training leading into nationals in like 2009, there were a few of us who were right around the same weights. And it helped when we were all loading, you know, within 5 kilos of each other, let's say. Like that, we had to share. We were training at the barn in Flemington, New Jersey, where the Roos have trained. And it was, if there were a lot of people in there, you had to share. It was 2 to 3 people a platform sometimes.
Although sharing with a super heavyweight is always difficult, because you wait about 10 minutes in between sets.
You got to do it like two. Yeah, it's got to be like a 2-to-1 ratio.
You load the bar for yourself, then the other guy, then yourself twice, then the other guy.
Let them sit, catch their breath after doing a single.
That's right.
And then you go again. Yeah. I mean, again, I feel sort of like somebody yelling at kids to get off my lawn, but I think there's something lost in that ability to share the bar, to really want to lift so badly that you're willing to deal with waking up early, being in a broom closet, reading falling apart strength and health issues. I can't learn.
Wearing a winter hat and gloves.
I know. I still write. My lifters are the only ones probably in America who get their programming, and front squat is FQ and back squat is BQ.
Oh,
because
God,
that's how it was in strength and health.
Right.
That's how I learned. But the good thing too is when we would go to a competition and the good equipment's there, you can use that to your psychological advantage. Well, and probably physical advantage too. You know, I remember walking up to the bar going, this is the good stuff.
Oh,
these lifts
yeah,
are going to
yeah.
be awesome.
Right.
So, you know, we really, it is important to provide all that at the national events. And so that's always my approach when hosting a national event, is to make that the best that they could experience. Wherever mm-hmm. they're coming from, whatever their training background is, to make that event the best so that it's their best lifting.
Yeah.
Now, who's the equipment provider for this year's nationals? Do we know yet? Can you say?
Oh, yeah, it's Alico. Nice. Alico has a contract with USAW to do the senior national events, and WorkSon is contracted to do the junior and youth. And I think universities too. But last year, we used Alico.
Very good.
So they have kind of a joint contract.
Nice. Yeah. One thing I was going to mention too, Debbie, you being a lifter who is, you know, seemingly very, very successful as a master's lifter. And of course, you were introduced into the sport as a master. And I think I've seen this pretty often, that lifters who do get into the sport as a master do tend to have a lot of success. And maybe that's due to, you know, not having the years of wear and tear that, some athletes may have had as starting as a junior, even younger than that. There was a lifter from Buffalo that I trained with for many years, Tony Calise, who, he's sort of, I think, a near age of 40. And he just recently sent me a message that was something along the lines of, my body has betrayed me, you know, in comparison to how he used to feel when he was, you know, in his 20s or even early 30s. But again, he's a guy who's been training hard for decades. So, you know, I think it is harder to be more successful at that master's level with all that wear and tear for all those years.
Yeah, I think my observation was, it's almost a natural selection process. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe just for women, I'm not sure if this applies for men too, but for a woman in their 40s to be training with using the Olympic lifts and then competing, that's hard to do, because mm-hmm. there are all kinds of other commitments that you have, you know, when you have a career and a family and all of that. So it's hard to even compete at that level. So you don't have very many people doing it at the world level, or, you know, at the national level in masters. It's more so now. Mm-hmm. But so I think it was just, you have to be, everything has to sort of align just right in your life to even have that be possible. Whereas the 20-year-olds, you've got a much bigger pool of people that are lifting.
Yeah. Now, Debbie, before you got into Olympic weightlifting, had you actually competed in bodybuilding or figure or any of those other things?
No. Okay.
So it never got to that point. Said, I need something else.
Yes. I think I did Bill Phillips. I don't know if you know him or remember him. He did a Body for Life transformation thing in like the 90s.
And
I entered that because I wanted to win something, you know, and I wanted to use my squatting and stuff to win something. So I just was competitive. But that was the stuff I didn't like. I really loved squatting with the guys, and I could squat, like, you know, we weren't doing Olympic squats. We were going halfway down, but I did like 350 pounds.
Whoa.
And I'm, you know, not that big. Yeah. And so the guys were just impressed that I could walk out of the rack with that on my back. And it was just fun. It's empowering for a woman to have that kind of weight on them. But no, I didn't want to pose or any of that.
Yeah, put weight on your back.
In fact, in the sponsorship. Yes. That sponsorship contract I had, I ended up leaving that early because I just couldn't take the photo shoots. I remember one day the lights were on me, and it's all day, and you're standing there posing for these photo shoots, and I could hear the people on the other side of the camera having this political conversation, and I just wanted to cry. I'm like, I'd rather be there. I want to be talking to them. This is really boring.
Right.
Did you have any other athletic background prior to getting into strength sports?
I did ice skating, figure skating, and ballet. As in high school and college. So
from what I understand, figure skating is incredibly taxing on the legs, correct?
Probably. I didn't know any better because I started as a kid. I started really young, but
maybe
I think
that's why you can squat 350 pounds.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Did, could. That's past tense.
Yeah. Now, is this also the case, too? It seems like, I mean, you rightly mentioned that for women getting to the sport later in life, there are all sorts of demands on their time, and it can be very difficult. But it seems like some women who've managed to continue lifting can be successful at high levels longer than men in similar situations. Like Melanie Roach, for example, competing at a, I mean, not just a national level, but like top national level at 40 years old. Do you find that that's the case?
Well, look at Szymanski. I mean, we talked about him at Worlds a little on we commentated. I mean, he was in his 40s winning world championships.
He seems like an outlier.
Yeah.
Melanie is too, though, honestly.
Yeah.
I have a lifter, Brittany Riesenberg, who's 36, and she's had four kids. And, you know, she hasn't been lifting a long time, so that's not the same. But she's in the A sessions of the 63s for seniors. And, you know, she's just amazing. So I don't know. I think our bodies biologically are different. I don't think they necessarily match our chronological age.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, mine's not a Szymanski. Well, I won't be winning anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a hormonal change that happens at different times. You know, not only dependent on what you're doing in your life, but also just your genetic makeup. You know, some people that's going to happen sooner than others.
Yeah.
Now, I'm looking at our time, trying to be a little bit mindful. We should maybe swing to the other spectrum, or the other end of the spectrum on age, and discuss this weekend's junior nationals.
Yeah.
And people who do have years before them in the sport to become world champions. Any standout lifts, Dr. Westbrook or Debbie, both of you?
Well,
should we say it at the same time? Maddie Rogers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. We can all three say that one at the same time.
Yeah. And just think about that again. This is a 69 kilogram female junior lifter.
Not a junior anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not a junior anymore. But still, regardless, snatching 105 kilos and clean and jerking 133 for a whopping 238 kilo total. I mean, that is incredible lifting. And really,
she hasn't plateaued. She keeps improving every competition.
Yeah. And these were new snatch, clean and jerk, and total records, we should say.
Wow.
Yeah.
And really, not only are the physical weights improving, but her technique just continues to get better too, which is really nice to see.
Yeah.
It does. And she still has room to improve it, too, which is so impressive. I mean, it's good. It's getting better. And she's obviously in very good hands with her coach, Danny Camargo. But, like, there is still room. And beyond that, she has room physically. She weighed in at 67.74. I mean, she's not even filling out the 69s.
Yeah, from what I understand, she has trouble just putting on weight. Which is crazy. It really isn't that crazy considering how much lifting she does and how much energy she's burning every day. But the potential there to gain a whole 2 kilos on a frame that's only 67 kilos, that's a big percentage. So who knows if those weights can continue to improve as they have.
And you know what this means for her in terms of the next few months? She's legit potential for that third Olympic spot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. So that's going to be a fight for the finish for that third spot. There's no doubt about that.
Now, Debbie, other lifts from the weekend that you found particularly noteworthy or sessions that you
I don't know how Colin Burns' numbers, you know, match up to what he normally does, but
not bad.
Debbie, did we lose you?
Debbie?
Uh-oh. We may have lost Debbie. But she was talking about Colin Burns, who I believe he snatched about 168, if I remember correctly.
He did 168, 196, I think.
196, yeah. Which, you know, not his best numbers, but still good numbers.
Yeah.
You both, Dr. Baffa and myself, were sort of fooled when we first saw a quick clip of James Tatum snatching 158 kilos, which of course would be the 77 kilo snatch record, but He weighed in at a healthy, close to the max as an 85 kilogram lifter, which really he looked better both in terms of the way his body makeup was, in addition to how his actual lifting looked. It looked smoother. He just looked more confident.
Yeah.
Sorry, you lost me there for a minute.
And there you are.
Back. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I'm not a professional at this. I'm not like you guys, not at your level.
Professional.
But yes, it was the movement of Colin Burns, just his technique. That's what I noticed too. And James Tatum, yeah, same thing.
I think we've mentioned this before, but Colin Burns technically is among my favorite athletes out there. Certainly among my favorite American lifters.
Mm-hmm.
In the snatch, I'll say. In the clean and jerk, he's very good technically, but in particularly in the snatch, just a very nice, classic, like, straight pull. Really looks like what the Russians are after.
Yeah, yeah. And he's been successful with it. I mean, again, that clean has always sort of been his weaker point, but the, you know, he snatched, I believe he's done 170 or maybe even more in training at some point. So, you know, I think when he's in shape, he's good to break a record, you know, so he's a guy that we got to keep our eyes on.
Yeah. And I mean, Kendrick did quite well too. I mean, 166 is a good snatch for him. And 202 is obviously off his best clean and jerk. But the fact that he put those numbers together in a competition is pretty good. I mean, 368 total for him, pretty solid total right there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, unfortunately, Angelo Bianco bombed out in the 77s. He made one snatch at 148 and then missed 179 twice and then missed 180.
That's too bad. You know, there's another lift done by a junior, not only a junior, but a youth lifter. I think his name Harrison Morris, is that the right name?
The 77
kilo lifter. Yeah, now he did 175 kilos, and I remember thinking this was well over probably 10 years ago, seeing Michael Martin as a 77 hit 175 at 16 years old, thinking to myself, that will never be undone. And here you have, not only is there CJ Cummings, who's done that or more at even a, you know, lighter body weight, but now we have another youth lifter who's capable of those weights at 77 kilos. I mean, that is really, really impressive lifting.
Yeah. Harrison Morris, I mean, he came back from almost bombing out in the snatch. He took all three attempts to make 130 in the snatch, but then made all three attempts in the clean and jerk for 16, 17 year old youth American snatch, clean and jerk, and total records.
Wow.
But yeah, really solid lifting and almost 100 kilos over body weight in the clean and jerk. He weighed in just under 76 kilos, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some interesting potential coming up from the junior lifters. Like you said, I mean, CJ Cummings, the obvious huge favorite going to the 69s, and he won that class with ease, 30-odd kilos above the second-place guy. But, yeah, Harrison Morris, man, he is.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I mean, if he can keep improving.
Yeah, I mean, he could. I mean, it's the same with CJ. I mean, these guys could be, and who knows where they're going to end up weight class wise. They're so young; it's hard to determine developmentally where their final body weight's going to be. But I mean, they could be really competing against each other in a very short period, which would be awesome to watch at a national and international scene.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
There was another. Young, let's see, she was a junior, I believe, in the 63s, Maddie Meyer. So another Maddie. But she ended up snatching 88 kilos and clean and jerking 118 in the 63s. So these were junior clean and jerk and total records.
Wow.
Yeah, so there, I mean, if you look at the juniors and especially the youth athletes, there's like some real talent on the way coming up.
Yeah, Nathan Damron is another 85 kilogram lifter who's looking really good. I think he did 150, 177. I think he took a big jump on the last attempt. I forget what it was, but just, you know, he's really solid. His technique, especially for a pretty young guy, is getting better and better. So he's a guy to keep an eye out for too.
Where does he train? Do you know?
You know, I'm not sure. I want to.
His team is Mash Mafia.
Elite. Oh, okay.
Or Mash Elite.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Travis trains people all over the country. So
yeah.
Remote coaching. So I'm not. We'll have to look him up.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's at it, but I mean, the 150 snatch is great as an 85, especially as a junior lifter.
Yeah.
So hopefully more things to come out of these athletes. Now, I'm looking at the women's side of the trials at this point as well. And, I mean, Maddie Rogers, obviously the standout. Morgan King also had a great day. 184 as a total, 83 and 101, but wasn't a 48-kilo lifter, weighed in at about 50 kilos.
But a pretty significant, and I'm not sure, I'd have to look back at her numbers, and she's probably done this already, but that 101 clean and jerk is over double her body weight, so over twice as much as you weighed in. And I would imagine she's probably done that as a 48 or less, but obviously the heavier you are, the more difficult that becomes, so that's a pretty big accomplishment.
I don't know that she's done... Has she done double body weight?
So if she went in at 48, that would be 96. And I don't know if she's done that or not. We'll have to look back at the records.
Double body weight is huge, though. That's
it's a huge for a female lifter. I mean, doing twice their own body weight is such a feat. It's unbelievable.
So, and if she can do these sorts of numbers in the trials later on, I think she would be another competitor for that third spot.
Yeah,
but just to do them as a 48.
Yeah. And again, it's only 2 kilos that she would have, or a little over 2 kilos, which is can be significant at that small of a body weight. But
that's,
I think,
4% right there.
Yeah, it is. But it's hard to say whether she just didn't really pay close attention to her body weight and, you know, didn't do the normal sort of cutting, sequence the week or two before or whatever her sequence is. Because if that's the case, then, you know, maybe 2 kilos wouldn't be such a big deal for her. I don't know.
There's actually a show or something. It's like 10 minutes or 15 minutes about her eating. And I forget where it is. Have you guys seen this?
Oh, no. I love that. It's one of my favorites.
It's actually kind of...
It's not just the eating. It's not just the eating that I love. It's just looking at her mindset. I mean, getting a little glimpse into, her approach to the sport and into competition. I think every lifter should watch it.
It actually is quite good. I'll have to dig it up and put it in the show notes. And it's not just about her eating. I think the website is perhaps primarily a food site, or maybe the web series is about food culture. And so they talk about her diet and her approach and whatnot. And you see some of the other lifters, but it is much more about Morgan King as an athlete and her time in the sport. And her approach to training and eating and lifestyle. It actually is pretty good. If Dr. Westbrook, worth checking out.
Yeah,
it makes a champion, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And really anything that has to do with food, I'm usually pretty interested in anyway. So
we ate quite well last time we were in Salt Lake City, Dr. Westbrook.
Where did you eat at?
I don't remember the place. We ate there three times, which is probably more than we had to. But,
yeah, we've had some interesting culinary experiences at weightlifting meets. It can range from really sort of elegant meals to Chipotle over and over again.
at Junior Nationals a few years ago, I think it was literally 2 days of just Chipotle in the 10-minute break between snatch and clean and jerk, because we were doing so much of the webcasting.
Yeah, it was an interesting week in terms of our digestive system, yes.
Yeah, but Salt Lake City, we had great food.
Yeah,
there.
We did.
Good.
Which we should probably, since we're supposed to be letting you go in 2 minutes, I don't know if that's going to happen. But if you need to run, obviously you may run. But you should, Debbie, tell us about the 2016 National Championships / Olympic Trials.
Oh, it's going to be so great. I'm so excited for it. You know, you get as a meet director, you get some time to prepare. You get 6 months or so to prepare. But for this one, the city of Salt Lake and I have been preparing and shooting for this for 2 years.
Yes.
So since 2014, our eyes were on the trials. And so we have been doing everything we could and lining everything up and making all kinds of plans to make this happen and make it special. And, you know, 2014 was an interesting opportunity for weightlifting events. You know, it was really recent, if not the very first. I mean, Dallas, USAW had taken over running the events for Dallas American Open that was right before that.
Yeah.
But Salt Lake City was the first true event that was owned by USA Weightlifting. Before
it was
just given to locals, and, you know, they had no budget and they were trying to put together a meet and
we remember
places.
Those days.
Yeah.
Short on volunteers, short on weights.
Not pretty. And, you know, they were doing the very best they could, but really smart for USAW to take that over. And so we wanted to, Phil Andrews and I wanted to make it really special. We wanted to bring the level of respect up for these events, make them illustrative of the amount of work that these lifters are putting in, and make these really premier events. So we wanted to create something really, really great. So, you know, when we were looking at venues, we just kept shaking our heads and going, no, it's just not right. It's just not right. And then we walk into the Grand America, this five diamond hotel with sparkling chandeliers. And we both just kind of froze. And we just looked at each other like, yeah, this is it.
There
this
were
is
four
what we need
chandeliers
to
in that room, I recall. It was a four chandelier event.
It was impressive.
Most
people in that
venue,
I think, would have been turned away at the door on a normal day in that hotel. That's how nice.
I know, right? The hotel actually asked me, they're like, now, who are the kind of characters that come in here? And
I said,
these are serious athletes. They are so respectable.
Did you just hand them a picture of Butch Curry and say, this is the wildest animal you'll have to deal with?
These guys, you can't even get them to talk. They're so focused on their lifting. They're so well-behaved. And everybody just stepped up. I mean, the Grand America just loved the weightlifting. They're begging us to come back.
Good.
They really.
So is it there again?
No. So when we did it in 2014, we knew it wasn't probably the right venue for events going forward, but it was the right one for that time.
Sure.
So it worked, and it was magic. But this time around, we needed, you know, something more auditorium style where we have more room. And so we're in the Salt Palace, which is a huge event center now. It used to be where the Utah Jazz played basketball.
Wow.
Right in the middle of downtown Salt Lake. So it's, you know, walking distance to all of the restaurants. It's going to be much more centrally located to other things to do. But we have the Grand America had a 20,000 square foot ballroom, and we have a 45,000 square foot ballroom now.
Holy smokes. That's amazing.
Yeah. And we have this whole outdoor patio. Now, this was also, the Salt Palace was the venue for it was the media center for the 2002 Olympic Games, the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. So it has all of those huge logos of the Salt Lake Olympics inset in the walls, and it's amazing. So it has its own history. And then we have the whole outdoor patio. So, you know, we've been planning this for a long time, thinking, let's make this really special. We have another opportunity here. This is an Olympic trials, and we're coming to an Olympic city, and let's really make that work. So we have designed a really great, it's going to be so fun. So outside, we're going to have an Olympic village, kind of a mini Olympic village, where we'll have all kinds of different food from different countries and music and, you know, the flags from the different countries and the Olympic rings and tents set up outside, so that it's really a sort of festival feel and brings out that Olympic spirit and the excitement for Rio out on the patio. And then you come in, and we're going to create this corridor, this huge corridor going into the Grand Ballroom that is a weightlifting walk of fame, because as you've already heard, and now you know, my love for the history of weightlifting.
You got all those old strength and healths.
That's right. I'm going to put them on display.
I have a few boxes of these old strength and healths.
Will you bring them?
I need absolutely
old shoes.
Can.
I need old shoes and singlets, actually.
We can talk to Ned about that.
Yeah.
But the new people, you know, these new lifters, they don't really know the history of our sport. And we were winning gold medals and at the Olympics in, you know, the 40s and 50s and 60s. And, you know, we have a strong history in weightlifting. And so we are going to create this whole huge, massive posters of these weightlifters from our history and create a timeline so that people get sort of exposed to the history of weightlifting. And then in that same corridor, we're bringing in the 2002 Olympic memorabilia, the Olympic spirit. So the Olympic Legacy Foundation in Salt Lake, Mitt Romney, who was the director of the Salt Lake Olympics, actually, I think he was one of the first, if not the only, organizing committee to set up a fund so that there would be, the venues would stay current and active, and the equipment that was used would stay relevant. So there's this ongoing fund in Utah to keep these things. So they created this museum, the Alf Engren Museum in Park City, and that museum is just loading it up and bringing it down and going to set it up in the Salt Palace. So we're going to have the whole Olympic feel from 2002 with the flags and the volunteer jackets. I don't know if you remember them. You will when you see them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a winter Olympic, so we're going to have the luge and the bobsled and things like that. And people can take their pictures in it. And we'll have photo ops with the Olympic torch. And then we'll transition into our Olympics for weightlifting and highlight Jenny Arthur and the future Olympians and the past Olympians from our sport. And we're bringing in, then you walk into the ballroom and we're bringing in, this is so exciting, the LED backdrop, the screen from World Championships.
Oh,
so we're
nice.
Shipping that to Salt Lake.
Really?
Very nice.
Yep, it's going to be epic. And we're just going to create this huge, amazing event, you know, as similar as we can to World Championships. Stadium seating, and oh, it's great. And that's not even kind of all of it. I mean, I split the ballroom. Well, Phil made me split the ballroom right in half. And so we've got this huge event going on that's going to be just spectacular. But the other half of that ballroom is warm-ups. And, you know, Salt Lake really was the first to bring the standard of the warm-up room to a whole nother level. You know, we invented what we call the warm-up room concierge. And these guys, I mean, we trained them to stand at attention, and they like had their hands behind their back, and they'd stand in the warm-up rooms. And if anything got out of place, they'd run and they'd pick it up. And after each session, they're sweeping everything and putting the plates all back where they go. And the water was just the right temperature.
Dr. Willis, but can you imagine this at our nationals?
Unbelievable.
I know, right? I mean, the lifters were, the coaches were like, the attendants would go ask the coaches, and they're going to do this at this nationals too. But they would go ask the coaches, are you okay? Do you need anything? Can we get you anything? And the coaches were saying, yeah, the water's too cold. And so we immediately changed all of the water and, you know, made it room temperature and all of that.
Right. Yeah, we were lucky if we even got a t-shirt at these meets years ago, let alone this kind of service. That's amazing. Oh.
This really is amazing. What was your first senior nationals, Dr. Westbrook?
Oh, boy. Was it 07, maybe?
Okay, mine was 06 in Shreveport. And okay. I'm still waiting on the attendance. They still have yet. Yeah, I told some people about the water temp, and I'm still waiting to get my properly chilled water from Shreveport.
You mean the bathing water wasn't what you were looking for between your lifting attempts?
It was not right. It was not right. It wasn't even water. It was just the sweat coming off of Butch Curry and the heat down there.
But I tell you what, Debbie, I mean, listening to this makes me want to take a whole week off and, come a few days early, stay a few days late.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have to be there for a long time.
And I wish that everyone could, but, you know, it's not really fair to experience what the trials athletes are going to experience. But we're really planning some special things for the trials athletes.
Nice.
You know, this is what everybody dreams to be at that level, you know, to compete at the Olympic trials. So we are going to drive them from the airport you know, treat them like a VIP, treat their coaches like VIPs that they are. Mm-hmm. And they each get assigned, and you're going to love this, I don't know, their own personal escort. So they're going to have a personal phone number of somebody in Salt Lake who will, as soon as they're ready to go check out the warm-up area, they're going to escort them across the street. Oh, wow. They're going to take them and orient them to the platform and to where the bathrooms are and all, wow, of that. A private training area. If they need something from the drugstore in the middle of the night, you know, they just call this person and we run get it for them. So
now, do the webcasters get this service? Because, you know, they're not quite as important as the athletes or anybody else there, really.
But yeah, some might argue that they're... It's fun
that... What's that?
It's fun that you bring that up because we... Can I talk about what we're going to do new with announcing and webcasting?
Absolutely.
We don't know. So, but yeah,
you're going to be the ones who are doing it. You agreed to do this.
Yes, we did.
So we have, you know, two platforms. We're in the two platform era. It's not really going to go back. And the benefits of two platforms are that it really is exciting. You know, there's more going on. So we need to try and find a way to make that work so that there's not an announcer talking about where you go get food while somebody's breaking an American record on the other platform.
Right.
So we're going to do at Nationals, we're going to have like a play-by-play announcer and a color commentator that the audience can hear. And they're going to announce both platforms, what's going on, and give you a story of what's going on both platforms, instead of the traditional loaders put, you know, 150 kilos on the bar. We'll still have the announcers there who are going to be broadcasting to the warm-up room and to the loaders and to the judges. Mm-hmm. But these color commentators and play-by-play announcers will be what the audience hears. So it's going to be really interesting and different. And I'm sure there will be all kinds of problems with it and things that we need to improve. But my goal is to sort of get people thinking creatively to make these weightlifting events really exciting so that we get TV coverage and we get more exposure to the sport.
Yeah, if CrossFit can get their major competitions on, you know, really major TV broadcasts, we should eventually get to the point where we can have that same sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to take some creativity, but we can do it.
What I think CrossFit does is they basically provide that content, or at least what they used to do is they provided that content to the networks. Mm-hmm. They may be even, and I don't recall exactly, but they might have even paid to have that put on, but it's definitely something they put together, and they spent a lot of money making it a real slick, nice package.
Yeah.
That the network would want to show. But I think there's no reason we can't do that as well. I mean, ESPN is not going to send a crew out to do this for us, but if we do it, and it sounds like, Debbie, you're doing it out there, you and your team are doing it in Salt Lake City, then yeah, I mean, I think there's a chance to create a really exciting broadcast that a network would say, yeah, we should put this up. We should let people watch this.
Yeah, and to create more of a story, you know, I want to know how these lifters compare against each other and who's really winning and what it means for the Olympic, you know, team. And, you know, the audience really wants to know more about what's going on. And I don't know, I throw out a challenge to the local meet directors throughout the country in the next couple of years to be creative with your meets, you know, stay within the framework of IWF and USAW sanctioned rules. And certainly, you know, keep the athlete perspective in mind. That's the very most important thing, to make sure the athlete does their best lifting, but, you know, be creative and let's find ways to make this exciting.
Yeah. Now, Debbie, you mentioned that, you know, this really is the shift into the definite need for a two platform meet, but with the jump in national championships qualifying totals, do you think there'll be a little, you know, this will be a more selective meet in comparison to previous meets?
Well, I was sort of hoping for that. And I think that, that's the goal, is to have national championships be, you know, the very elite only. And so, you know, eventually we want to do that. But I still think that whenever we raise the qualifying totals, people step up.
Yeah.
I mean, I've already seen people in Utah that I didn't think we'd have as many people qualify, and people are qualifying left and right. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm guessing 350.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Are you getting entrants already?
I think so. I'm not up on that. They go through Phil and USAW, but
wow.
So I'm not sure where we're at on registration right now.
It's amazing to think that these qualifying totals literally surpass medal winners of an era not longer than 10 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
It's really come a long way in terms of the quality of lifting that we see here in the States.
Yeah.
Even the American Open qualifying totals have been bumped up quite significantly from previous years. I mean, the current American Open totals that I'm looking at right now, for a lot of these men's classes, are more than the nationals totals of not that long ago.
Right, right.
And historically, nationals was significantly more competitive, so...
Well, and, you know, I think they sort of had to go up with when you have a 900-person competition.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, it was fun, but
it's
crazy.
The natural evolution of running a meet, I think.
900 people. That is extraordinary.
They did a great job. Yeah, they did a great job.
I was not there, so I...
They really did. They ran a tight ship, and they didn't let anybody in the warm-up rooms when they weren't supposed to be. And I mean, it was still chaos in the back, but they really...
Yeah.
Reno pulled it off.
That's great. Now, moving on to other great meets, we have a meet coming up in just 2 weeks in one and only Columbus, Ohio, where people go to only one time a year. And that is the first weekend in March for the Arnold Sports Festival. I understand that both Dr. Baffa and Debbie will both be there. Is that correct?
Yes, I get to go.
That is right.
I'm very excited.
And now, Debbie, this will be your first Arnold experience. Is that correct also?
It is. I don't even know if I dare admit that. I think it's a shameful, embarrassing thing to say. I have just watched the Arnold and held it to the highest, you know. I just love the Arnold. In fact, when we were doing the 2014 Nationals, that was the standard. I said I want it to get somewhere near the level of the Arnold. So I called Mark Canella, and I didn't think he'd return my call, and I just wanted to ask him to help me, you know, because this is my first time ever. And he was super nice, super nice. He's really free and generous with sharing his experience and his knowledge, and he really helped me through that. And has helped me through a lot of meet since, giving me a lot of information. He's been a great friend for a couple years. But oddly enough, we have never met in person.
Oh, really?
Not crazy.
Really?
That is crazy.
Yeah.
He really started this sort of mentality of changing the traditional way to run meets in the States, I would say. And it really has just done such a great things, not only by running meets based on more of a Sinclair formula with cash prizes, but also bringing in really top world athletes for us as Americans to be inspired by, which, you know, and Dr. Baffa, you can talk a little bit about your first experiences at the Arnold years ago.
So this will be my 10th Arnold.
Wow.
The first one, and I've only missed 1 year since my first year going in 2005. And that's where I met a young man by the name of Dmitry Klokov, who was sporting, this is no easy task, the brightest pants in the Arnold weekend, I'm pretty sure.
And a fanny pack. Yeah, don't forget about that.
Exactly. And
what year was this?
This was 2005.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was my, and I was just getting back into weightlifting after having done it in the mid-90s for a brief period, a year or a year and a half or so. I was just getting back in 2004, and so, you know, I'd gone from a few local meets to then going and experiencing the Arnold. And that is a moment you cannot forget. Your first Arnold. I don't even know. I mean, you have a lot of experience in the sport now, Debbie, and you've been to the World Championships. But Dr. Westbrook, the Arnold, I would say, it's a different beast.
It is a different beast. Yeah, it really is.
It's a very orange, very tan beast very often.
Yeah, you never know what to get or what you're going to get at the Arnold in terms of some crazy experience where you meet some famous bodybuilder from years of past or some weird, you know, event of strongman that's in the big, what do they call the big
expo hall?
Yeah, where Misha was just a couple years, where I got to shake his hand. I mean, what other opportunity do you have at a random place to meet somebody like a great Russian super heavyweight powerlifter, Olympic weightlifter? He really has done it all, and to have him crush my hand within just a few seconds. I mean, that's something you're not going to get anywhere else but the Arnold.
Still recovering from that handshake.
I still can't snatch. I just cannot do it. And I'm going to blame it all on Misha.
Yeah, I rightfully so, I would say. But I believe I saw him that year as well. And there's a picture of a few of us around him sort of ascending the summit of Mount Misha, as I like to think that photo. The Arnold is really like nothing else.
Yeah, well, Mark was the first to do the spotlight lighting on the platform in America anyway. And, you know, that's what I wanted for Salt Lake. So we had all this elaborate stuff planned and we get there and I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'm thinking, is this how it needs to be? So I pull Nat Aram up on the platform and I said, okay, tell me for pictures how this is going to go. He goes, well, what's your goal? What's the goal? And I said, and I couldn't come up with the word. And he goes, epic. I said, yes, that's exactly what I want. He goes, okay, epic lighting. And so Nat designed the lighting at Nationals. It was great.
Really?
That's great.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
But yeah, we wanted to match the Arnold because it's just beautiful. The photos that they have of these lifters highlighted on those raised platforms is just amazing.
It's funny, the photo that comes to mind most frequently when I think of the Arnold of years past is a photo of Dr. Baffa sporting a large Italian afro sitting next to a fanny pack of Dmitry Klokov, who looks truly like a different person than he does today.
The photo that comes to my mind, Dr. Westbrook, is you on the Arnold poster of a few years ago.
That is true.
With a jerk grip so wide, it looks like you're snatching 145 kilos.
Website. You have to add that.
Yeah.
I don't even know where the digital version of that thing is. Like, I don't know if we have a high quality digital version.
I doubt it. But that was truly the pinnacle of my weightlifting career was being on the Arnold poster. So
yeah.
I have that poster still. I do have it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You got to bring it. You got to bring it to this Arnold.
I should, or maybe just a miniature version of it, so I don't have to lug it around.
It might actually need to go in the Walk of Fame at 2016 Nationals.
This is
have the spot for it.
This is not worthy of that Walk of Fame, I can assure you.
So on the sort of Arnold, I feel, and pictures of oneself, I feel like they need to share one of my memories from my first Arnold when, so 2005, obviously the year after the Olympics in Athens, and the two Chinese gold medalists, the two of the Chinese gold medalists were there, Zhang Guozheng and Shi Jiyong, the 62 and 69 kilo medalists from Athens. And they were lifting in the exhibition area, in the expo, essentially, just messing around, lifting huge weights. And I think it was Zhang Guozheng. He wanted to lift with his singlet, like one strap down, kind of like a Tarzan type thing. And I mean, it was in like the expo thing. And one of the judges came up and told him, no, put your shirt back up. Like, put the strap. At the end of it, he threw out baseball cards of himself.
Wow.
Signed. Wow. And I got one.
Wait, you have one of these cards?
I lost it.
Oh, Dr. Baffa.
I lost it.
That's very
sad. I think
I
traded it for a poster of Jonas Westbrook on the Arnold. I think I said that's worth more to me.
I can sign that for you if you want me to.
Yeah, he threw out into the crowd cards with his signature on them. I can't believe I lost it. So this is my greatest regret in the sport. But Debbie, you have no idea. I mean, this year, I don't know that there are any international stars coming. I don't think so. There's, a Polish lifter who was a top 10 finisher at the Olympics. Maybe will be there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know that Mark, and I don't know, he's probably going to be mad at me for sharing this, but I know that he had a dilemma of who to allow because he has a position on, you know, clean lifting and drug use. And so he really had to make a conscious decision this year to kind of withhold, I mean, you know, stand up to that, keep up to that standard. So, yeah. So I think that was part of the decision making this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and the expo is its own thing to see independent of weightlifting, mm-hmm. but it is interesting to see how weightlifting at the Arnold has changed in the 10, 11 years or so since I've been going and since Dr. Westbrook has been going, because now, and this is neither good nor bad, but the Arnold has a real veneer of respectability. I mean, they hosted uh-huh. the trials a few years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dr. Westbrook, I'm sure you remember a time where the Arnold was like persona non grata. Like, you did not want, if you were in that USAW circle, like, you did not want to be associated with the Arnold for a lot of reasons. I mean, and that was part of its appeal, I think, early on. It was this, like, kind of renegade outsider thing that was doing things very differently mm-hmm. and very untraditionally, but still within the bounds of the sport, obviously.
Yeah. We also have to keep in mind, too, that if you're walking through the expo, you're probably going to test positive for something, considering yeah. the bodybuilders, the power lifters, and others who are in there and taking all sorts of supplements that are being offered at booths that you would, so many booths yeah, that you, sure. you can't even count.
Literally hundreds. I think 700 vendors is about the number I've seen, and they're all offering something free to drink or eat. And your best bet is just to take them. Just somebody gives you candy, something on a tray, just take them and deal with the repercussions later. Submit a TUE to USADA and hope that you cover whatever it is you took.
Well, USADA will say, oh, he went to the Arnold. Okay, well, that's fine.
I think that actually will hold up against USADA. I think any positive, if you just say, I went to the Arnold, it's like a mulligan. You basically get a do-over.
But it's such a coveted competition now. I mean, Mark's in a position where he's got to cap it, and he's even doing two platforms this year, mm-hmm. and yeah. he's got to turn people away. And he's got the best lifters in the country and coming, and it's within yeah. the qualifying period for nationals, Olympic trials. So our best lifters still have a chance of making trials if they post a qualifying total that puts them in the top 15 at the mm-hmm. Arnold. So, you know, we should see some really amazing lifting there. So.
Is that the last Olympic trials qualifier?
There's no Olympic trials qualifier. You can put yourself in the top 15 with any local meet. Just you have to post. Yeah, just by the 27th of March, you have to post a higher total. So.
Okay. Yes. So that's pretty late, though. That's for those top lifters mm-hmm. who are at the Arnold, that will probably be their last big meat for a lot of mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
So if you go to New Jersey, you can use straps and fourth attempts to get in that top 15 and make that trial.
You don't even need to lift.
I hope I'm not wrong. If straps can help you get into the top 15, then you're good.
You're good. Okay. I like that. That's good.
Straps, grease thighs.
That's the only thing that's keeping you out of the top 15.
If only it were that easy for me.
I know.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Yep.
All the straps in the world wouldn't get me in the top 15.
What about baby oil? A little bit of baby oil, Dr. Baffa.
So, in all kidding aside, Dr. Westbrook, I'm positive you've used baby oil on the thighs.
I've never done it before. I need to.
Debbie?
Okay, can I just take this moment, since we're kind of on topic, to talk about world championships? I'm sitting there in the loaders side, right? So I can see these lifters on the platform really, really well. And I won't say what country they were from, but they had huge, wide belts underneath their singlets, like huge, like
back braces?
Yes, like braces.
Interesting.
Under their singlets. And I'm texting people, you know, that I know. I'm like, is this legal? They're like, no. And I'm like, and you know me, well, you don't know me that well, but you know, I'm thinking, I'm going to go tell somebody, you know, I've got, this has got to be righted. This wrong has got to be righted. And people were like, just let it go. It's not your area. Just load the bar. But apparently that stuff happens.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, before, when you couldn't double wrap the knees, the thickness of wrist wraps, the thickness of knee wraps. Although there's always a sort of border that's breached.
Everybody's looking for an edge.
Yeah, of course.
I remember hearing about, I forget where he was from. I don't think he was an American lifter, but my coach telling me about a lifter who came out with greased thighs. And the officials were like, no, absolutely not. So they had to wipe them down. But what he did was he then greased his arms. And when he went to go grab the bar, slid them along his thighs.
Yes, I've heard that. Yeah.
So there's always that edge. Now, Debbie, have you tried? So Dr. Westbrook has not. Have you tried greasing the thighs in a clean or a snatch?
You know, I am so, there's so much meat on the bone for my technique in general that I'm not even worried about that little tiny bit.
There's nothing tiny about it. There's nothing tiny. Believe
me. Okay, I'm trying it tomorrow.
It's the first time is shocking. Make sure you're high ceilinged in the gym.
Really?
It's shocking.
This is great.
So is this a regular occurrence for you, Dr. Baffa?
Not anymore.
Was baby oil a part of your gym bag for many years?
Straps, baby oil, and my shoes. I didn't go anywhere without them. I think usually it was a Nivea lotion. It was like a cheap lotion that you got that obviously, you know, all lotions try to tell you that they're non-greasy. This was like the cheapest one that was super greasy. And it works. Let me just say, it works so well, it's dangerous. Like there's a risk of really hurting or getting a barbell to the face.
Wow.
If you're not careful.
I've never, I haven't seen anyone called out for it. So maybe this is a ripe time for somebody to give that a try at a big meet.
Not at mine.
Not at Nationals.
I have guards right at the door.
She's going to be on that like a hawk. But at any other meet, at the Arnold perhaps, that might be the place to give it a whirl. Any of you who are going to the Arnold. Debbie, it's well past the time we said we'd keep you until, and we probably should wrap things up. It's probably also well past the time that we usually allot ourselves. So our half-hour episode, just a shade over a half hour
just
and an
barely.
Hour and 5 minutes, I think.
Oh, very good. That's not bad.
But is there anything you want to add before we let you go, before we sign off? Anything people should know about where to find information about the Nationals or about your club or about your involvement?
Well, I think the only place you can find information about Nationals is on the USAW website right now.
Oh, God, don't say it.
We will be doing, hopefully, we'll be doing some interviews with our potential Olympians and some old-time weightlifters and putting that out on social media. So that ought to be fun. And my club is Praxis Weightlifting in Utah, and we have a website. And our gym actually is downtown Salt Lake. So if anybody, I send out the invite, anybody who wants to come and train there. You know, some people have this thing with high altitude. If you want to come early and train at my gym to kind of get used to the altitude before the competition, you're absolutely welcome to. We have a great team. I might have 5 lifters at Senior Nationals this year.
Wow.
So we're doing really well.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, not to dive too deep into this, but does the altitude have as much of a significance with non-aerobic activities when
it comes to... We had how many American records set in Salt Lake?
Is that right?
I don't know how you can really argue with that.
Yeah.
The thing that
I thought it was all greased thighs. That was.
It was the epic lighting.
Yes.
I think that people mostly felt it with thirst. I think they felt thirsty more. Mm-hmm. So they felt the dehydration somehow. But no, I didn't really get many complaints. Everyone was worried about the altitude, but it didn't seem to affect the lifting at all. So.
Well, greased thighs and many American records are to be hoped for at this this year's Nationals in
you
Salt Lake City.
Totally spreading rumors.
I am looking forward to this. I can't wait to see the weightlifting, the history part. I can't wait to see the Olympic kind of a pseudo-Olympic village part. This really, I was excited before. I'm even more excited now.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. Just a couple months away.
Excellent. Well, Debbie, thank you so much for taking your time and joining us on this podcast to tell us about all this information. It's been really wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure. Well, Dr. Baffa, that wraps up once again another Two Doctors podcast. So it's been wonderful as always, and we've got a lot more to come. Of course, the Arnold, both of us will be there. We will not be commentating at the Arnold, but we'll be there enjoying the spectacle that is the 2016 Arnold Sports Festival.
That is true, and trying to ease Debbie into it perhaps as well.
I'm going to be giving her, with loading.
You're loading there?
Oh, not loading, but I'm going to be organizing the loaders. Okay. I've been hired as an employee.
Very nice.
But, yeah.
Well, we look forward to it. And Dr. Westbrook, I look forward to meeting up in lovely Columbus, Ohio as well. Checking out the North Market and getting some solid meals out there. But, thank you again, Debbie. This has been a pleasure. And to everybody listening, if you're going to be at the Arnold, we look forward to seeing you there. Thank you for listening. Make sure to check out our website, thetwodoctors.net with the number 2. Check us out on Facebook at The Two Doctors, Twitter, Baffa Westbrook at The Two Doctors, and on iTunes. And if you enjoy or like what you have been hearing, then give us a rating and let us know what you think. But again, thank you, Debbie, and thank you, Dr. Westbrook, as well.
Thank you, Dr. Baffa.
Thank you.
And we will see everybody next time.